You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, we're joining you right after the 76ers beat the Suns last night, 123-110. And as always, I'm joined by co-host Brendan Kleen. We both write for Bright Side of the Sun. Brendan, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I had a fun time at the game last night, even though kind of got away from the Suns at the end. It was pretty impressive just to see them really battle back at all. I think at halftime we were all kind of worried it might go downhill, but it definitely did not.
Yeah, that was a pretty valiant effort that the Suns put together last night. They were willed by their three guys, Devin Booker, TJ Warren, and Marquese Chris. We'll start off real quick with Devin Booker, as we always usually do on this podcast, with how he's putting together these performances back-to-back-to-back. And he did it once again last night. He did have six turnovers, and he was pretty much locked down in the first half. He only had 4 points, four assists, and two rebounds in the first half, while he was pretty much swallowed up by Robert Covington. But in the second half, when Covington got in the foul trouble, Booker went off, and he ended up finishing with 32 points, six assists, and five rebounds. So once again, Booker did it. So, Brennan, what's your reaction to this one?
Well, first of all, I mean, some of the shots he was hitting in the second half were absurd. And yeah. I mean, credit to the Sixers defense, Robert Covington especially, but also J.J. Redick, I thought, had a pretty solid game, especially when he was matched up on Redick on the defense, or on Booker on the defensive end. It's just crazy shots that he was being forced into because of their defense. But in the second half, a lot of them went in, and 5 of 10 from three is just wild, considering the difficulty of a lot of them, and just being able to bounce back one of the hallmarks of this Booker season, I think, has been that ability to kind of get back into form even when he starts slow. And it was another impressive instance of that last night. It actually had me thinking, just my time covering the Phoenix Mercury, Brittany Griner is their big, and she's MVP caliber, one of the best players in the world. And this season, like, her big, really big step was beating the double teams with her passing. And she just instantly was finding teammates as soon as she saw that double coming. And it didn't necessarily result in the best numbers for her all the time. But just seeing somebody make that next step as far as making the right decision was really good to see. And I think we're seeing a lot of the same from Booker, where, you know, you'd like to see him being able to score every time. But the reality is, with Warren being really the only other option, Booker doesn't always have that chance. So to see him kind of one step ahead of the double team a lot of the time with his passing was another good factor, I thought.
No, what was really interesting last night, though, and I know you probably thought the same, was how Brett Brown, he brought some really very, like, different kinds of traps and pressures at Booker that right when he stepped over half court with, like, TJ McConnell and Jared Bayless double teaming him and trapping him, he had Saric and Embiid coming at him most of the time from the perimeter. It was really one of those games where I think Booker hasn't seen that much thrown at him, and he kind of did well after Covington got off him. So just what was your thoughts on what Brett Brown was trying to do? Because I know last time they played, he dropped 46 on him in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I think I was just kind of the sheer amount of times that Brown went to that scheme against Booker surprised me, because we did see it, I think, quite a bit before he got injured. I don't think any of the past few opponents since Booker's return have really gone to it so extremely, that really aggressive double team. And then when he's running over a pick, it's, yeah, pretty aggressive trap almost with the big man. Especially, you know, Saric has the feet to be able to do that, and Embiid can at least kind of hedge out pretty well. So I think part of it is the Sixers have the personnel to pull that off more than the Kings with somebody like Zach Randolph. That's clearly not really something they're capable of. But, and Triano, I think, put it really well post-game, which is, you know, Booker had such a good game in their last win, and then obviously had a really incredible, one of his best games of the season in Philly the last time these two teams met. So Triano, I think they were kind of expecting it on their end, just, you know, weren't the Sixers weren't going to let that happen again, at least not any easy points. And so, you know, they pulled it off, which was impressive, but it made sense that they would at least try to be more aggressive.
And another note here on Booker from last night's game was that in the final 8 minutes, we saw Point Book come back, that lineup featuring Devin Booker, TJ Warren, and Troy Daniels. and that finished off the last 8 minutes. The Sixers went with Ben Simmons and Embiid those last few minutes as well, so the plus-minus will probably skew the overall result of how they did. But what was your thoughts on them going back to that lineup and even more trying to explore on those options with Devin Booker at point guard? Because I asked Jay Tree after the game about that, and he said they probably will try to see how they can use Devin Booker at point guard alongside Troy Daniels and even any other shooters moving forward outside of closing situations. So what's your overall thoughts on that?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting what he said too, kind of along the lines of I think what a lot of people were thinking, and what I mentioned on the last episode when we were talking about the potential of it, and obviously we did see it again last night, is just that Daniels is having such a good season, and he's just legitimately probably their third or fourth best offensive option at this point. And with the developments I feel like he's made this year with the consistent playing time as a just dribbler, honestly, and a passer, just making really smarter plays as an offensive player, it makes him more playable in lineups where he's not simply just a catch-and-shoot player. So I think that's been a big development that's allowed lineups like that to work. I don't think a previous version of Daniels, maybe the one that people saw beat the Trailblazers in the playoff series, what, if 3 or 4 years ago now, that version of Daniels wouldn't have been able to make this happen. But I think he's such a good player, and he's been so effective this year that you owe it to him and you owe it to the team as a, you know, competitive team to try to at least toy with lineups that are just going to make you better. And at this point, I think that's one that's going to do that. But yeah, last night, I think it was it was 23-14 over those last 8 minutes. And I think overall we were kind of talking about it at the end of the game last night that Booker missed a bunch of shots when he was just kind of chucking to see if they could maybe get back into it in the last minute or so. So it'll kind of skew. But yeah, they were outscored by 9 over those. So it didn't go tremendously for them yesterday, but we'll see what happens in the future.
I know it's hard to say now, but expanding on those lineups with Booker and Daniels and Booker even running the point guard exclusively, I try to do that maybe if they're going to do it outside of those closing situations, maybe do it before halftime. I think they tried that against Memphis in the first time when Booker returned, and they tried to get going before halftime. But is there any sort of situations where you'd use this lineup, or would you rather be like more exclusive and keep the burden off of Booker, even though he already carries such a big one?
Yeah, I think Triano kind of alluded yesterday that he really sees it being most useful when they're in a situation where they need offense more than defense. So maybe you'll see it in those situations more and more. And then as maybe if they show that they can handle those minutes together, and Booker can be that kind of playmaker consistently without, I think the big thing for him might even just be without losing too much on defense, right? Because I think he can handle shooting 30 times a game, passing and making plays for his teammates consistently. I think, you know, we've seen that. He played 39 minutes last night and didn't really look, you know, tired necessarily by the end. Put up 22 shots, got to the line a bunch. So he can handle that. I think it'll just be for him. If he takes an even bigger load on offense consistently throughout the game, what that'll do to his defense might come into play, especially just knowing what Triano values on that end. But, yeah, he said that it makes sense for them at this point to just do it when they really need a bucket. And so I would assume they might just kind of lean into that a little bit harder and then see where it goes.
Yeah, I agree with you on that point there, Brennan. But let's move on as well to TJ Warren. He had another big game last night, and he's really thriving now. I mean, probably one outside Marquese Crisp, I'd say TJ Warren's the other guy that's probably thrived the most off Booker's return. He had those 9 games where he was the primary number one option. Now he slid back into that number two role. And whenever Booker gets off and cold, Warren's always there to step up when needed. So what's your thoughts on Warren's 28 points last night?
Yeah, it was good. He didn't have to hit as many difficult shots, which is always good to see for him. I think it is like a little bit anxiety-inducing sometimes, the way that he tries to go to the basket and shoots these ridiculously hard shots. A lot of what he was getting was open cuts to the rim in transition, the way that he really, really can be most effective, because he's not dribbling, over-dribbling and trying to create. It's just really he's letting the offense come to him, and, you know, when teammates are finding him, that's always good. I think it was really good yesterday to see him and Booker, or especially Booker, passing to him, because that's something I think we all kind of watch closely game to game, is how those two kind of can fit and what they can learn from one another going forward. And I think yesterday was a fun step ahead for that pairing.
Now, with that, the Warren and Booker duo, they've had five total games where they both have scored 25 points or more. That ranks third in the NBA behind James Harden and Eric Gordon and DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis, which has a pretty wide lead at first place with 11 total so far. So I know we talked a lot about Booker's progressions in year three, but real quickly, I mean, it's kind of hard to ignore the progressions TJ Warren's made also on both ends in year four.
Yeah, I think actually, I don't know. I need to watch more closely on defense because I've been so interested in his offense and the consistency he's shown there and the effectiveness he has on that end. But I liked his defense last year when I tried to make an effort to see kind of what he was able to do there. And I liked his potential as a steal guy and someone who could just kind of at least play team defense and use his length to get in passing lanes. And I haven't noticed it jump off the screen or off the court as much this year, but definitely the offense. I mean, we talk about it all the time. It's pretty undeniable. But yesterday was the first time, right, that he scored over 25 and the Suns lost.
Yeah, they were 8-0 coming in. Now they're 8-1.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, whatever. The Sixers have a lot of talent. I think we saw toward the end that their two guys just are better than our two guys, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree on that point. I mean, you have Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Those are two number one picks, and the Suns' two guys were number 13 and number 14, I believe, in the draft. So McDonough's gotten pretty lucky with the late selections, and Sam Hinkie, trust the process. He got them Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. So they're going to be pretty set off as well in Philadelphia for a while. But a pretty underrated piece I want to touch on from the Philadelphia side of things is Robert Covington, because he had Devin Booker in clamps last night. He was 4-14 when matched up against Covington. So I know you told me he signed a four-year, $64 million extension last night. So what's your overall thoughts on Covington? Is he kind of the guy that would be the perfect fit alongside Booker? Because I know Mikal Bridges is a pretty hot name as far as the 3-and-D prototype goes, and he kind of fits the Covington bill. So is that the kind of guy you'd want to put alongside Booker long-term?
On the wing, I think it makes a lot of sense to have. But, I mean, I don't really think there's any player in the league who you couldn't say would benefit from like an elite 3-and-D guy, right? That's like the ultimate NBA glue guy at this point in the history of the league. There's a reason the Sixers left cap room open last summer to have enough to renegotiate and extend Covington when the time came, and they're more than happy to have that kind of player locked up long term. Just seeing him in person, I was down to watch him, and him and Redick actually warm up at the same time, or I don't know if they normally do, but they did last night, and incredible, just basket after basket from those two. But just to see Covington, I mean, his wingspan is like 7'2", 7'3". He's just the basically prototypical defensive player, and I just don't think there's really many guys like him in the league, so I kind of wasn't surprised that Booker would struggle. Just, you know, he was really the only guy that they didn't have to send help for. When Covington was on Booker, he was handling him by himself.
No, yeah, he was 4-14, and you could easily tell, I mean, from his frame, like, he's a pretty big guy for a three. I mean, he's pretty built from the shoulders up, and he's pretty hard to handle on those screens because for when Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris was setting, he was blowing right through him.
Yeah, I think he's like 6'9", so he could be playing the four if they wanted him to. It's just they have so much depth at the front court that it doesn't make much sense. But yeah, I think the other guy with that front court is Dario Saric, and kind of segues, I think, into the last guy we were going to talk about, Marquise Chris. Just the kind of smoothness and finesse that Saric plays, I think that's a pretty big thing for a lot of European players. But combining that with his size, he's not the typical skinny European guy that comes over. He's plenty big enough to handle Marquise Chris, and was a big part of him getting into foul trouble and then scored 27 points himself to lead the Sixers in scoring last night. And I think if he doesn't have that game, I think the Suns have a much easier shot at beating the Philadelphia.
With Marquise Chris, I know we touched on it last night when watching it. I mean, he had a really rough time against Saric. Saric is a pretty fast-footed big, and he blew by Chris multiple times last night. But in only 20 minutes of action for Chris, he did have 6 personal fouls, 4 turnovers. That's on the negative side there, but he still filled up a stat sheet pretty good. He had 12 points, 2 blocks, 1 steal, 2 assists and 7 rebounds, and 2 threes made last night as well. So Chris is one of those guys. I mean, if he gets it, he's going to be pretty darn good in about 5 years or so as far as stat in the stuff in the stat sheet, as I say, because like I think I looked it up today as far as guys that can have steals and blocks and at least 7 rebounds and 10 points a game multiple times in the past 5 years. I believe the only two guys are Draymond Green and I believe it's DeMarcus Cousins as well. So it'll be pretty interesting to see how that falls for Chris as far as potential goes, so you can kind of see in those numbers. But what was your thoughts on his performance last night?
Yeah, he was a plus one, too, despite them kind of getting out to that big lead against the starters in the first half. And I think that was mostly because he was a big part of that third quarter run that they made. Those two threes were actually back-to-back that he made on back-to-back possessions that really started their comeback run. And then you really could tell that Triano wanted to stick with him down the stretch of the game, and then he had to give up that sixth foul. I think it was in transition, I remember it being a good foul, if my memory serves correctly, and kind of disappointing that he had to leave the game because of the mistakes he made in the first half, because he was playing so well to start the second half. So I think at one point someone on Twitter, Suns person on Twitter, said this is the exact, like, quintessential Marquese Chris game, because right as he hit those two threes, he's in Saric's face on the other end, and Booker had to come kind of calm him down and avoid that technical foul. And so you saw the good and the bad, right, with Saric having such a good game and with the inconsistencies with the fouling and the turnovers. But, you know, he makes two threes, and that rebounding was back, as we've seen for a few games in a row now.
Now, I'm going to have a story on this tomorrow. There's going to be shoot around tomorrow, and I'll be there for Brightside of the Sun. I'm going to have a story up around then on Marquese Chris. And in his last three games, he's averaged 10 points, 9 rebounds, over a steal and a block and 2 assists per game. So it's been one of his best overall 3-game stretches of his career so far. And I wanted to ask you, Brendan, do you think that this is a mirage from Chris? I know he's been pretty inconsistent. He's had these types of moments, and he dips right back down. So do you think this next week or so is pretty important as far as his sustainability goes?
I think so. I think the Hawks are an interesting matchup just because he has an advantage a lot of the time on the court, just because of how bouncy he is, and he really can be everywhere in a way that a lot of guys can't. He won't be able to do that against the Hawks. I don't think they have John Collins comes to mind first as their rookie, who's had a really inspiring season after going, I think, 20th overall. He's been a really fun player and someone Suns fans should check out tomorrow when they play the Hawks. And so I think he's an interesting matchup for Chris, and the Hawks play really, really small a lot of the time, so he's not going to have the athletic advantage he has over a lot of guys. So just as far as tomorrow goes, I'm interested to see kind of what he can do, but for sure that on the fact that he needs to keep it up. But I think, you know, he's shown strides this year over last year. I think we both can agree on that, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's on the, especially on defensive end, I noticed it a lot last night. He had that highlight block against Ben Simmons. But, I mean, to you, has he taken the biggest stride as far as rim protection goes?
I think that's – I don't know if it's a stride as far as, like, ability, because I would assume a lot of people – that's the slot that he seemed most able to impact consistently, even coming out of college. I think blocks were –
yeah, for sure.
He blocked a lot of shots in college, you know. So it's just a matter of, again, like you're saying, the consistency of being able to do it and have it be an impactful part of the Suns as a defensive unit, rather than just, oh, Marquese Chris had a chase down block and that was fun, but they lost by 25 and he fouled out in 15 minutes. That was the story a lot of the time last year, where he was still jumping off the screen with those crazy plays, but it wasn't really a useful part that the Suns could really rely on. And I think you're seeing it become that more and more this year. And that's been, I think, just for a lot of these guys, it's been the consistency.
Yeah, I agree with you on that point as well, because like you said, Chris will have these moments and they really won't matter in the end, or he has those inconsistent moments where he gets the turnovers, he gets those fouls, and you've seen the good and the bad. It's really been the prototypical Marquese Chris stretch so far, but if he can maintain this for the next week or so, it's gonna be pretty darn interesting to see if that maintains or not. So real quickly on the Hawks as well, Brendan, how do you see tomorrow playing out? The Hawks have the worst record in the NBA, so it should be a pretty, I think, go-ahead win as far as talent goes as well with the Suns roster over the Hawks. I mean, Booker should have his way against the Hawks guards as well. So how do you see this one playing out?
I just want to be on Twitter tomorrow and not see Suns fans talking about wanting Dennis Schroeder, to be honest.
Yeah, real quick on that. Yeah, real quick. Why do you... I've seen that as well. Why do you think that? Because I saw that right away and I just didn't like it either.
Yeah, I just think if he's not able to thrive with any amount of shots and possessions used that he wants in this pretty disastrous, not a disaster, they clearly were planning to kind of tank the year, but he can do whatever he wants on the court this year with so little talent around him and Paul Millsap out of town and whatnot, and he still isn't showing himself to be the kind of elite playmaker that you want him to be. I think he looks for offense a lot of the time first. He's not, despite being really, really quick, isn't really a difference maker on defense. I just, you know, I feel like I know what he is already, and it's not necessarily somebody I imagine being elite by any means, or even really like a good complimentary piece. That's just as simple as that. I don't see the talent really being all that high. I don't know. He's a great player. He shows it every night that he had a 22-8 last night. So, I mean, whatever. But it just, I don't know. It doesn't seem like he's really going to be a difference maker in his career. He's already been in the league for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, as far as fit goes alongside Booker, I mean, that's kind of the guy you really don't want alongside him, I think, because he doesn't play much defense. He's only, I think, 6'1", so he's shorter than Trae Young. And even though they say that Young has issues with height as far as pre-draft scouts go. But real quickly, we'll segue into the draft, because I know we talked about the bigs last week with Mo Bamba. He had another big game tonight for Texas, if you want to check that one out. But Trae Young, Colin Sexton, Luka Doncic, we can touch on him as well. I'll class him as a ball handler. So how do you see those three as far as this draft goes? I know Doncic is my number one prospect on my board. I think it's for you as well. But how has the ascension of Trae Young really taken off this past few weeks?
Yeah, I'm planning to really dive into him. I've seen him, you know, the highlights, and I think I saw some of the Northwestern game and here and there. But 39 points against the number 11 team, an undefeated team in TCU, yesterday afternoon, and just performance after performance after performance, no matter what defense he's facing, no matter what scheme people throwing at him, he's able to beat it in so many ways, and it's just incredible to watch that guy work and just look so confident and whatever as a freshman. It's just crazy to watch him, and I think we've seen a lot of guys be able to shoot so well, but to be able to also really dice up defenses as a passer in transition in the half court, finding, you know, guys all over the court, is it just you watch defenses just unravel when they try to kind of contain him. It's really impossible at this point for college defenses, at least.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the comparisons to Steph Curry, I know they're pretty easy to say and also pretty far out there as far as talent goes, but Trae Young to this point, I mean, even though Stephen Curry played 3 years at Davidson, I mean, he's pretty outmatching Curry's production at Davidson so far to a pretty big amount too. I mean, his playmaking is way further ahead than Curry's was, and even his outside shooting at this point as well. So he's kind of the modern day guard you want alongside someone in the NBA, and that's probably why his stock's going to soar if he continues over the next week or so, probably even next month. But how do you see Young faring as far as like big boards go? Because I'll probably have him in my top 8 on the next one, but I think he's a guy that's going to be continue to rise to maybe top 5, top 3 come summertime.
Yeah, I still think I have him below Colin Sexton, who I'm continuously, I've watched games now where he hasn't had all that great performance. I watched him against Texas. I went back and watched that game just to see the Bamba Sexton matchup, and he didn't have a good scoring night by any means. Alabama has a system where they run a lot through. They have 2 or 3 ball handlers on the court a lot of the time, and so Sexton isn't really running a typical, you know, heavy pick and roll type of system that he probably will in the NBA. So he's still impacting the game. He plays defense in a way that's really smart. It's not really, it's very lazy, but you can tell just watching the plays he can make that he's pretty, he just sees the game at another level than a lot of his teammates or his opponents do. So I think I still have Sexton higher, but yeah, I think Young is undeniably, top 10. I can't imagine anybody making an argument why he's not above really at the top of that second tier of players after the, you know, first 4 or 5
I know you mentioned him already, but we'll go right to Colin Sexton, the point guard out of Alabama. I saw him live against Arizona as well, and he had a pretty dominant performance. I think he finished with 30 points or 29 and about 2 assists, but he took over that game in the second half and almost willed Alabama back to a victory near the end. So what's your overall thoughts on Sexton and his overall fit alongside Booker long-term? Because if the Suns do finish at like pick 7 or pick 8, where they're really heading towards at this point with how Booker is ascending, he's kind of a pretty good consolation prize if they end up around there.
Yeah, he is, and I think it's looking like with the Suns having their own pick and the Miami pick, it's really right about where the first and second. I mean, Doncic will probably go from number one or two, so he's obviously, along with, you know, maybe DeAndre Ayton, a really tier all to themselves as far as talent goes. So I still think he should be on the top of everybody's board and a player that the Suns would be more than happy to have. So this isn't to say that they shouldn't be targeting those kinds of players or whatever, but the way that they're going to be able to pick is right about at 7-8 if they keep this up, and then again at the, you know, middle teens where Miami will pick, and that's right where the kind of point guards are bulked up. So they have Trayvon Duval and Troy Brown in that teen range, and then Sexton and Young in the 7 or 8. So they're lucky, and I think Sexton is going to be a really, really good offensive player. I think his shot is a little weird to watch him flip it up, but it goes in a lot of the time. He has body control when he's going to the rim. I think he's going to get stronger. I think he's going to be able to finish over players a little bit better rather than just relying on his quickness as he gets older and just gets more reps. And I hope Alabama leans on him a little bit harder, especially assuming they make the tournament in March. So I just think he has the potential to be a really, really top-notch offensive player. And then, like I said about his defense, I think he just can make plays that a lot of guys don't even see. And, you know, Alabama plays zone some of the time, and he's pointing guys around and directing traffic a lot, which you could call laziness, and it might be a lot of the time. But I just think seeing what he can see on defense makes me at least intrigued to see what he can do on that end.
Oh, I totally agree with you there because, I mean, Sexton has that it factor. I saw him, his warm-up routine is pretty intense. He's really one of those guys that's a gym rat, and it's shown because I think he was a 3-star recruit initially in high school, and he went up to 4 stars and 5 stars just through sheer hard work and dedication. I watched a video on Sexton actually a couple weeks ago on that. It was pretty interesting to watch. But real quickly, we're going to jump over to Trayvon Duval as our final point guard prospect, and I know you probably have him around in the late lottery, so I have him actually in my early 20s. I'm not as high on him as most, surprisingly, but what's your thoughts on Duval?
No, I think you're right. I think I'm going to have him. I think maybe by reputation and by the fact that he plays with Duke, and I assume he'll start to look a little bit better with so much talent around him. And I think, you know, the part with scouting him is trying to sort apart what exactly is something he's not doing well or command that he doesn't have right now compared to just playing next to somebody as dominant and established as Grayson Allen. I think that makes it hard to really know what exactly Trayvon Duval is supposed to be doing and what he is good and bad at. At least that's been my perception watching a few of their games, because Allen really handles the ball quite a bit, and so Duval can't really shoot right now. So if he's playing off the ball, it's just not a good situation for him. So I think I haven't finished the back half of my next mock draft over at FanSided, but I imagine he'll be right around where you said, late teens, early 20s.
As far as fit goes, I know Jeremy Wu, we had him on a couple weeks ago, and he was higher on as far as fit goes as with the point guards in this class with Phoenix, because he said Duval's transition offense, playmaking, and defense is actually a pretty good fit alongside Booker. So what's your overall thoughts? I mean, it'd probably be the Miami pick or maybe even late 20s if they wanted to trade back or trade up. But do you like Duval's fit as like a third scenario as far as point guard goes?
I think if you fall that high, if you fall that low and you I don't imagine that they'll trade into the first again. I don't think they're going to have 3 rookies on the team. Yeah. So it would have to be some sort of, trade back or a different sort of situation. Maybe the Miami pick falls a little bit if they have a nice surge like they did last year or something. But I just think if they get that far, there's better guys. You know what I mean? I just think Duval is just hasn't shown it to me, and I would be more interested in upside picks at the end of the draft like that, at the end of the first round like that. I honestly think Duvall at this point is like a taller Tyler Ulis, and I do mean that as a little bit of a compliment, because I think it does show that he's a good playmaker and a pretty active defender, but offensively, what do you do with a guy like that, that he can't finish around the rim, he can't really shoot, he doesn't have a floater, there's just such a limit for him right now, and I just want to see at least some glimpse of what he can do to kind of develop that offense before I really would pull the trigger on him.
Real quickly, we'll touch on for our last prospect, it's Luka Doncic, the number one prospect on almost everyone's boards around here, but as far as the Losing for Luka campaign goes, the Suns had a good start with that under Earl Watson, the two multiple 40-point blowout losses, but then over the past few weeks, they've kind of dug themselves out of that hole with Jay Triano, and now they're sitting at 14-24. I think they're ninth in the lottery standings, so they're kind of far out as far as the Doncic dreams goes, but maybe with the number one schedule over these next couple months, they kind of fall back into that sort of race with alongside Atlanta and Cleveland, that Brooklyn pick as well. But real quickly on Doncic, is that the kind of guy that McDonough would save up his assets for and just say, screw it, guys, we're going all in around Doncic and Booker, and let's just cash in all these assets right now?
Yeah, I still think if they're going to pick high in the draft, we might have already seen them win too many games. They would have to be pretty bad the rest of the year to really get a top pick to get into the low 20s. We're talking about what they're at, 14 wins right now. So, you know, to really be at the top of the lottery, they're only going to be able to win
less than 10 games.
Yeah, so I don't know. The Kings and the Hawks and teams like that are really not doing well, and they have much less talent than the Suns do. So I imagine they'll be too high for their own pick, but yeah, I think I still kind of sit the same as I have, which is the best way to get a high pick. And I do think there's guys like Doncic and Ayton that are worth it right now. Doncic, just because of the versatility he has, and he already looks like an elite offensive guy. He's doing it in a league that's super competitive and doing it on a nightly basis as an 18-year-old. So he's going to be a really, really a good offensive player right away, and that's the kind of guy you trade whatever it takes to get up for. And so if McDonough feels like this is the draft to do it, and he has the assets and the right partner at the top, then in a team like the Kings might even make sense. They have just as many young guys as the Suns, and you know, maybe they're not in a position to do that. I don't know. They should, any team should draft high like that, but you give some team the right offer and maybe it works.
Now, as far as the fit with Booker goes, I know that'd be almost more towards positionless basketball at that point, because Doncic is 6'7", Booker 6'6", Josh Jackson, TJ Warren, they're both 6'8", 6'9". So as far as the fit goes with Phoenix, he's almost a prototypical fit with all those teams in the top 5, top 10. But is that the dream scenario almost for the Suns if they were to get those lucky lottery balls, or to even trade those assets, like we said, to get Doncic alongside Booker?
I think you watched the Sixers game last night, and you kind of dream about what those types of teams look like. The Sixers are just to consider them conceptually is fun and weird and interesting because of the length and craziness with having a 6'10 point guard and a 6'9 guy who can play anywhere from 2 to 4, and Joel Embiid being able to shoot threes, and Dario Saric is like a point guard almost himself. And so you see the types of things that teams like that can do when they have the talent and versatility. But I think it just remains to be seen. I don't feel like I know enough about the Suns to really know what the team could look like. But as an idea, I love it. I think it'd be crazy to watch a lineup of Doncic, Booker, Jackson, Warren, and like Bender. And that's just wild if it could actually work.
Yeah, I really think that is the type of prospect alongside DeAndre Ayton that you cash in all those assets for, because at this point, I think the Suns are that one star piece away from really ascending up the West in the next few years. So if they are to get that one big prospect like Doncic, that I think that is the guy you cash in those assets for. But real quickly, we can wrap this up, Brendan, but final thoughts on tomorrow's game against the Hawks. I know we touched on a little bit earlier, but got a little sidetrack as far as the matchups go, but anything outside of the Booker matchup and really Marquese Chris's ascension over these last three games to keep an eye on, anything else that you look out for?
I mean, as much as I like picked on Schroeder, I do think I always worry that team can take advantage of Tyler Ulis and Isaiah Cannon. Schroeder's going to play big minutes, and if he gets going, then it is going to be tough to stop. The Suns don't have defense at the point of attack like that consistently, at least. So Ulis, I think, even on his bad nights, is usually pretty effective, but you know, Schroeder does have, he can put up points and assists pretty easily if you let him. So they'll have to at least watch out for that and play good defense as they always typically have recently.
Yeah, like you touched on earlier as well, Brent, I'm really interested to see that Marquese Chriss, John Collins matchup, because those are two almost of the same prototype of prospects, two big leapers that are really trying to transition into two-way prospects as well. So it'll really be interesting to see how this game goes. I think the Suns will probably pull out a win. I mean, they should over the worst team in the league, and it's almost constructed to be a perfect tanking team up to this point if you're led by Dennis Schroeder. So it'll be interesting to see how that game goes. But until then, we'll see you guys tomorrow.